It's time now to get behind the headlines of this week's Hendersonville Lightning with editor and publisher Bill Moss. Lightning Thursday is brought to you by Fletcher Park Inn, independent Christian retirement community. Fletcher Park Inn, Henderson County's best kept retirement secret.
Good morning. It's time for Lightning Thursday here on The Q with Bill Moss, editor and publisher of Hendersonville Lightning and HendersonvilleLightning.com, back in the Lightning radio seat. Good morning, Bill Moss. Great to have you back here at The Q.
Good morning, and great to be back in the Lightning saddle after 1 week hiatus.
Yes, and a typical Lightning Thursday, there is no lack of news. No lack of news ever really in Hendersonville and Henderson County. So let's start. Bill, you and I had the pleasure of taking the tour, a sneak peek, if you will, at the Gray Hosiery Mill and the new construction that's happening there for those apartments. And you've got the story this week on HendersonvilleLightning.com.
Absolutely, it was an honor to be invited. Good turnout for that.
Yeah,
it was an invited open house. We say the public got a look, not super broadly the public, and there was not. I don't guess I expected it to be maybe not even this far along, but I'd like to go back in I don't know 3 or 4 months from now and see.
Yeah.
There'll be a model apartment or something.
Yeah.
But what they're doing inside, people of course are talking about the long-awaited Gray Hosiery Mill. City's had it since the early 1990s. Has been trying to get a developer of some form or another. This is a really kind of a plan B, but after the idea of a boutique hotel was deemed to be not financially doable, plan B is working out pretty well and looking very good. What's happening, as you saw, under roof, all dried in now, under roof is what looks like a lot of hustle by the contractor.
Yeah.
And it's real kind of neat. I was talking to Steve Carricker about this, and subsequently city council member Steve Carricker, who's been maybe the strongest supporter of this on the council over the last 12 years or so, and he knows a lot about contracting and work like this. But if you just go down the corridor, how quickly they're framing these in now. They're framing in the one bedroom, the two bedroom, the studio apartments. And I also remember back right after the first of the year when they announced that the developer Belmont Sayre out of Carrboro had decided to do this version. They had done the Moses Cohn Mill in Greensboro and lots of other historic renovations like this, and said, "Oh, we hope to be open for occupancy by the first of the year, January 2020." And I'm like, "That ain't gonna happen." I thought it was just too aggressive a timetable, but it looks like they are now planning on pre-lease next month in August, September timeframe.
Yeah.
And then also to be able to occupy by January, as they said. And the way they're hustling out there, they obviously know what they're doing. Looks like they just might pull it off. It's a great addition to downtown Hendersonville. Mayor Pro Tem Ron Stevens told the Lightning it's going to bridge the gap. This is a big deal. It's going to bridge the gap between 7th Avenue and Main Street. And he adds it's like the historic courthouse in Hendersonville High School, too much. Much talked about projects on this show for the last 5 years. It's like those in that it's preserving a building that means a lot to a lot of families. So look for that. It's real cool that amenities include things like these things, granite countertops, energy-efficient appliances, high ceilings, spacious closets, a welcoming lobby, dog park, an outdoor picnic, and grilling area.
And you really chose a great choice of words when you said preserving a building, because when you really go in there, you can tell that they really respect that building and they're really keeping true to the original design of it. A lot of that, the wood that they've reconditioned that was all there, those hardwood floors, all of that. So, and the windows, the windows themselves. So a lot of light. It really is a very cool concept.
Yeah, the windows, the clerestory windows up at the top.
Yeah.
That's one thing the contractor, one of the three owners, told us and was proud. Now they've had to, in most cases, duplicate the look of the historic windows. It is on the National Register of Historic Places, and they have to be careful about, especially anything that affects the look of it from the outside facade. But they have duplicated those, and they'll be operable, he was proud to show
us.
You can open and close those windows. You can just imagine having it airy, very light. I think it's going to be, and I think it's going to be a real neat community of 35 households. I think it's 35 households plus a total of four townhomes. And those townhomes are really neat.
Yeah.
They are two stories of really basement and ground.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody was telling me it's a little bit of a low ceiling. I'm sure it's still meets code because the ceilings are really high, are going to be really high
in the
factory part of it. But in this front part that you can see there that faces 4th Avenue, you can see the windows that'll be basement level, and then you step up a little bit onto ground level, and those are the townhomes. So I think it's going to be a really neat community of nurses, teachers, police officers, young families, maybe some retirees as well. Wouldn't surprise me at all. That do want to walk. You know, millennials don't even want a car these days. Walk to 7th Avenue.
Absolutely.
Walk to our budding brewing district on 7th Avenue, and obviously on to Main Street. Because as another part of this, as far as the city's part of this public-private partnership, is that the public involvement of the city of Hendersonville is to really dress up, make the sidewalks, more visible and pedestrian friendly from Grove Street to Main Street and from this site down Maple to 7th Avenue.
Yeah.
So really cool stuff.
Yep. Something else that's on HendersonvilleLightning.com today that you can see is the story about the Stroop murder trial, and your headline is Stroop murder trial likely not till next year. Really, Bill?
Yeah, really. From already, we're right at actually the 2-year anniversary of the really terrible, tragic death of Tommy Bryson, well loved, long time Mills River native and long time resident. We're already 2 years, as I say, from that murder, and because back last spring, they had the sudden change in the entire defense team. It's no longer led by the Henderson County Public Defender, but there's a different defense lawyer, from Waynesville, and some other members of the team. And I think it being a capital case, they can't take a chance on saying inadequate representation or whatever. So they have a meeting with the judge in October. We report on HendersonvilleLightning.com, and that's only a meeting kind of see, okay, where are we? When can we set the trial? And the Lightning was reporting on Greg Newman actually last month at a meeting. He was speaking to AgHC, the agriculture promoting group, and he said, I know a lot of y'all in the Mills River farming community knew the Brysons and knew about that case, and he updated them on that and said, sorry, but we have to be careful with it, and we have to meet with the judge, and looks like we'll set a date at that time.
Well, the Lightning will certainly stay on top of this one. Let's go a little wider. Let's cast our net a little wider than Henderson County, Bill. Again, another story that you have here on Lightning.com. Ex-Buncombe commissioner indicted for horsing around with county dollars. There are your headlines again.
I pointed this one out to, I think maybe readers would be interested just because of it shouldn't be funny exactly, but because it... If people have been following the former county manager Wanda Green saga and her federal indictment and civil lawsuits and so forth of really stripping the county of millions of dollars in various ways when it comes down to it. This is the first time, and people have wondered that. I think the local Asheville paper, Citizen Times, has tried to find out, and they've interviewed county commissioners present currently and the ones that were in office at the time and said, didn't y'all know about this? You know, and people have suggested there's got to be some county commissioners maybe that had their fingers in this pie one way or another. Well, this is the first time there's been an indictment of an elected official, and the federal grand jury on Tuesday indicted former commissioner Ellen Frost and charged her with conspiring to commit a bunch of fraud and so forth. Some of the more startling, and this had to do, apparently she was an equestrian person, a horsey person that owned horses and liked to ride, and apparently liked the high life too. So they divert this $500,000 more than into these sponsorships, basically, and all kinds of other spending having to do with the Tryon Equestrian Center and a similar facility, a big equestrian center down in Wellington, Florida, that's also owned by Bellissimo, the owner of the Tryon Equestrian Center. Two dinners, for instance, two VIP dinners by themselves at Dashville Hotels, totaled $5,877.
Wow.
They went down to that Winter Equestrian Festival at the Palm Beach International Equestrian Center, and then they enjoyed the VIP table there. Another trip was to Saratoga Springs, New York, in which Frost and Wanda Green took supposedly to visit an equine quarantine facility in New Bern, New York. But instead, they never visited that, and instead they went to play the horses. They went to horse races, and they visited a large private farm where a horse that Frost once owned was stabled. And that trip cost $8,800. So lots of interesting details in a really news release from the federal U.S. attorney on that indictment of a county commissioner.
Hmm.
Thank goodness we don't have anything like that here.
Exactly. Hey, before we take a detour and hear from some of our sponsors, another story that's on HendersonvilleLightning.com, because it's just started, I guess, this week, and that's the big detour with the first roundabout coming at Irkwood and Shepherd.
Yeah, absolutely. This is something we checked out on Wednesday morning, and we saw other people doing it, too. You know how there's been some detour signs there?
And they tease you a little bit.
Well, there was like 3 weekends in a row back in March or April when they were trying to get some work done, and they were going to do it over the weekend, and they put the sign out that said it'll be closed Friday night until Monday morning. And it wasn't. And there was a reason. There'd be a big forecast of rain. They just couldn't do the work. They said, well, we're not going to close it unnecessarily. When we can't do the work, we're going to get washed out. So they kept postponing that. So people were testing this, even though they had been warned it's going to start, it's going to be closed from July 17 to October 17. Well, I was one of them, but on purpose, because I saw that. And I said, well, I want to make a picture of the actual barricade so I can show people on HendersonvilleLightning.com. And then the Hendersonville Lightning will show people that it started now. And we did. And we were there making a picture. But as we were there making a picture, we saw like 6 cars that tested it to see if true. And there they were making their U-turn. But I'm here to tell you, and you're here to, and you're welcome to go to HendersonvilleLightning.com and look at a photograph that shows, yes, the detour is underway. It's blocked.
And do I recall in your story, does it say that when it reopens on October the 17th, as long as weather and everything permits, that it will be a useful roundabout at that time.
In operation. And interesting, that is what David Uchiyama, the NCDOT spokesman for Western North Carolina, I said, well, that's a pretty long time. I remember he had been telling me that he, in earlier stories, that it was set to be open and operable as a roundabout in fall of this year. And he did confirm, yes, that'll be usable. And the only reason I attach a little bit of an asterisk to that is, in a separate meeting, some other reporting we were doing, I heard that the final date of that, actually, of this project to be finished, is June of 2020. So, and David did say, now, people will be able to ride on the roundabout, but there'll still be some landscaping, I don't know about sign. I would think signage would have to be something that would be there right away. But if you look at it, it's much bigger than some of us might have anticipated. anticipated. I mean, it's got a huge footprint because they do, I think the reason why it's not just creating a roundabout where two roads meet, like some of our other proposed roundabouts, but they're misaligned.
Yeah.
Because they're misaligned, it's a large footprint, which means you'll be able to go fast around it.
Stop with that. All right, so October 17th, good Lord willing and the creek don't rise. We'll be testing out the roundabout right there on Irkwood and Shepherd. We'll be back with Lightning Thursday with Bill Moss, editor and publisher of Hendersonville Lightning and HendersonvilleLightning.com.
Fletcher Park Inn is the best-kept retirement secret in Henderson County. Make plans now to come for your tour and complimentary lunch at the only Christian independent retirement community in the area that offers a daily lunch buffet with meat and vegetarian and vegan options. Don't miss our summer special. Sign up before Labor Day and your first month is totally free. Come and see our spacious remodeled apartments available now. Call Lisa for details, 209-6935. This is Linda McIntyre, director at Fletcher Park Inn, inviting you to visit today.
Kaysen Builder Supply, the official sponsor of patio season, providing quality landscape and masonry materials, exceptional customer service, and superior delivery from locations in East Flat Rock, Brevard, and Greer. Now is the time to prepare for patio season with a visit to Kaysen Builder Supply in East Flat Rock to see displays of outdoor rooms, pavers, retaining walls, and fire pits. Kaysen Builder Supply, providing exceptional service for over 40 years. The official sponsor of patio season. KaysenCompaniesInc.com. In business, relationships matter and trust must be earned. Duraline Imaging wants a chance to earn your trust and your business. Duraline is your single point of contact for office equipment sales, supplies, service, and repair. Duraline Imaging provides copier and printer sales and service solutions that lower cost, reduce waste, and simplify operations. Give Duraline a chance to earn your trust and your business. Give them a call today at 692-1301. Duraline Imaging, 692-1301.
Hi, folks. Chris here at Diamond Rush Jewelers. Maybe you look down and your watch is not working and you just need a new battery. We're here to help. For $5 in about 5 minutes, we're going to get you on your way, and we love doing it. So come by anytime and see us in two convenient locations. It's downtown Brevard and, of course, in convenient Laurel Park Village.
Welcome to Wag Pet Boutique. Oh, hi, Brian. How are you?
Hi, Caroline. Guess what? I just adopted a dog from Blue Ridge Humane Society.
Oh, my goodness. That's so exciting. I'm so happy for you.
So, look, I need a leash and a dog bowl and a pet bed and some treats.
Well, hold on, hold on. Every dog is an individual, so let's just pick out a couple of things now, and as you get to know your new best friend, we'll help you pick out exactly what your dog needs.
That's great advice. I'm so glad I came to Wag first.
Well, we're always happy to see you, Brian. Tell your friends to come visit us at Wag Pet Boutique on Main Street in historic downtown Hendersonville. We can't wait to see you at Tales in Town on July 27th.
And we are back with Lightning Thursday with Bill Moss, editor and publisher of Hendersonville Lightning and HendersonvilleLightning.com, brought to you by Fletcher Park Inn. Now that's retirement. Bill, let's get to the print edition now of the Lightning, which is on the streets and in your mailboxes. Lead story. Boy, I tell you what, Taproot, talking about the Taproot possible development, but that company doing more than just trying to develop right there at Taproot. And your question here is, after Taproot, will county okay any affordable housing?
Well, yeah, exactly right. Of course, we're talking about the almost 891 unit subdivision and very big development on around 287 acres, I think it is, of the old, no longer operating as a dairy, the old Johnston family owned Taproot Dairy Farm. And after months and months of discussion and debate and behind-the-scenes negotiation and hand-wringing and anguish and public comment and so forth, the Henderson County Board of Commissioners has once again, after turning down three different developments in the Horseshoe Etowah area over the last couple of years, has turned this down, saying it's just too the opponent's saying in a 2-2 vote, the opponent saying, sorry, it's too dense. We think it just won't be the quality of life that we'd like to be able to endorse. We're worried about this airport flight path situation, Asheville Regional Airport, its chief executive director, its assistant director, and its legal counsel were repeatedly, from the very first time this got proposed, through the neighborhood compatibility meeting, through the board, through the planning board, and in, I think, three different meetings before the Board of Commissioners said, no, we really don't like this idea. The FAA is not saying no, but we're saying we think inevitable will be hit with nuisance complaints, and we think there's always a hazard if you're right under an airport flight path, and it's close to the end of the runway for sure. And they said planes would be, hundreds of planes would be like 400 feet overhead, and people would really tire of that, and then they'd become running back to the airport and running back to the county commissioners and saying, do something like this. So they suggested it would end up suppressing the growth ability of the airport one way or the other. So that's done for now. We don't know if there may come back with, it's always possible that a developer or an owner could come back with some other version of development that is allowed under the current zoning and say, here's our site plan, here's our master plan for what we by right under the zoning can do. Not I don't have any information on that, but that's a possibility. But we asked the question of Bill Lapsey, who worked very hard to push this thing, and we talked to Steve Dozier, who is a prominent realtor and is also chair of the County Planning Board, what's next. And they said, well, we don't know, but we know we could have used this affordable housing. It'd be a little bit less than the average new home in the area.
Well, and that's where I come in. And back to your headline, will county okay any affordable housing? In this market, to a certain degree, you're going to have some higher density neighborhoods in order to meet a price point that would be called affordable housing.
Yeah, exactly what Mr. Lapsey, who's a civil engineer in his vocation for 40 years, was as a civil engineer and doing projects exactly like this, and he made exactly the point you just did. The availability of relatively flat land, mostly cleared land, and all in one place, as this was, is that was really rare, and it is a missed opportunity in that way, because the developer putting everything together, site plan cost, buying the property, their cost to build the house, was still trying to hit that price point of $180,000, less than $200,000 to $210,000. Some of them went up to $250,000 or even a little bit more, but there were some more around that $200,000 range, which for a new home in a nice neighborhood with an Olympic-sized pool and walking trails and a dog park and so forth, it would be, we don't have around here.
Right, right. Interesting. Let's head to the next story here on the front page of this week's Lightning. Widening opponents sue to toss sign regulations. That's something going on in the Village.
It is something going on in the Village. The lawsuit that the Hendersonville Lightning reported a few weeks ago was likely to materialize has now landed with a heavy thud on the desk of the Flat Rock Village Council, the Flat Rock Zoning Administrator, and the Flat Rock Mayor, Bob Staton, himself a lawyer. Has landed and has said in its pleadings on behalf of Ann and Paul Coletta and their group called Cultural Landscape Group, says that, no, sorry, your sign regulation, your yard sign regulation ordinance is content-based and thus an unconstitutional infringement of our free speech rights under the First Amendment of the United States Constitution. So, first step, what Mayor describes is about an inch thick lawsuit, including all the supporting documents and what is actually, I guess, maybe on the top of the file is a motion for an immediate injunction to stop the enforcement of this yard sign ordinance. So, presumably, with the Highland Lake project, though, approved and right-of-way acquisition is underway, the plaintiffs say they want to still comment on things like the Highland Lake project and maybe things like greenway plans, other projects, other zoning cases. They say it's not true that they can't be stopped. What the ordinance did is said if you are commenting in your sign on a pending issue like the Highland Lake, then you have to take it down. I think it says 3 days after really a final decision, or it gets tabled, or in other words, after it's no longer a pending decision
right
for the decision-making governing governing body. And under that interpretation, that meant those signs on day four were in violation and they could cite them. And they ultimately did, months later, they did cite a few property owners that still did have their signs up. Well, Ms. Coletta and the lawyers say, no, sorry, that is already infringing on our speech because there's other, we want to comment on that and other things, and this ordinance won't let us.
So ultimately, this ordinance is treating those signs more like political signs. To a certain degree.
Yeah, oh, it is. It is treating that's them more like, like campaign signs.
Yes.
But when you say political, I'd use the word in another way on the plaintiff side, saying that that the ordinance really by making these signs the same as campaign signs is infringing on political speech, which is. So one of the higher levels, you might say, of protection, a protected speech under the First Amendment. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
Now, in other words, it's easier for a sign ordinance, and the Colettas would point out, they're not saying that, that a restaurant or Bill's construction company should also be able to put up signs of an unlimited size, but they're saying no. This is so specifically in their argument. This is so specifically political speech that it is obvious in their minds that it is protected First Amendment political speech.
So where does it all stand right now?
It's a good point. As Mayor Staton actually predicted, when they raised taxes in part to set aside, I want to say $40,000, but to set aside, appropriate an amount of money against the chance that they would need an outside kind of federal court specialist to defend them, has done that. They have filed, you can read all about the law firm they filed and where they stand on that, but they have filed that, they've hired that law firm to respond to the lawsuit in federal court to oppose the injunction. So that's where it stands this minute. That has not been done yet. Will be done within, I think, around 10 days from now.
Okay. All right. Fantastic. Let's stick with politics here for a minute. Under your local briefs, we've got, I guess, folks who want to run for municipal elections have through this coming Friday to register, but you've got a list of folks who have currently registered to run.
Yeah, there's a few more now, but the ones we're looking at, and we point out that the ones, a little bit surprisingly, this didn't used to happen in Mills River, although it did happen in the last election cycle in 2017 when two challengers actually ousted two incumbents. So now we've got a situation once again in Mills River where we have the two incumbents, Roger Snyder and Wayne Carlin, original board members of the first, going back to 2003, Mills River Town Board. Well, we've got three challengers so far, Randy Austin, John E. Case, and Mark V. Case, who have filed for seats. So Mills River is kind of an interesting case study, really, in this whole overall theme that we've had over the last many years of growth management, how much growth do we want, and roads and different issues like that. I think that's coming to bear in Mills River, just as it's coming to bear in the Flat Rock election, maybe even to some degree in the Hendersonville election.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very interesting municipal elections this year.
More interesting than
typical.
We're always interested in them, but sometimes we have to force ourselves or dig, or you know, do more digging to draw out candidates and why are you running for election? What are your goals and what do you see that you'd like to change? And if it's a challenger in the current council, that's not going to be tough to do this time.
Right.
These candidates are coming into the election with very specific platforms.
Mm-hmm. On page 7 of this week's Lightning, you can find out more about our Tales in Town coming up, our second annual Tales in Town. Of course, we've been doing Bark in the Park for years, but WTZQ and Downtown Hendersonville and Blue Ridge Humane Society, of course, it starts with that Strut Your Mutt 5K fun run to benefit Blue Ridge Humane Society and our other area nonprofits. But we'll be out there on Maple Street In front of the Historic Depot again, coming up, not this coming Saturday, but next Saturday for Tales in Town. Great little picture here from last year's Tales in Town. Thanks to Jules Buckman Photography.
Couple little pups, it looks like.
There'll be a whole lot of pups coming to downtown Hendersonville on Saturday.
There's a run and everything.
So you get that full story here. Hey, there was a fundraiser last night for Josh Poor at Dry Falls Brewing, and you were telling me you've got some information here, Bill, on many other fundraisers and many other local help for this fire captain.
Absolutely, yeah. I just said we ought to shout out for sure that went on that from Captain Poor, the background band, that on Thursday, on June 13th, he suffered a really serious injury and spinal cord implications, serious spinal cord implications with that really bad mountain bike crash in the Bent Creek Trail, popular mountain biking area. And he's on the way to recovery. He's been moved down to Shepherd Center. We've heard about that for a long time with serious spinal cord injuries for rehab like this. So keep those in your thoughts and prayers. Go to the HendersonvilleLightning.com. Go to, I think it's there's a Josh Poor Facebook site, which has ongoing fundraisers, and there are lots of them, and they're constantly updated. So keep that family
in your thoughts. Yeah.
Childhood sweetheart, wife Ashley, and the boys River, Logan, and Brody in your thoughts and prayers as they continue on that road to recovery.
Absolutely. Something new coming to the Lightning. How old is Hendersonville Lightning and HendersonvilleLightning.com now?
7.5 years.
7.5 years.
Yeah.
Well, got something new happening. You taught me a new term a little while ago off mic. You said the word paywall.
We did. And it's a new, it is a new opportunity is exactly right. And that will be for the Friends of the Lightning, and we have lots of them. But for that 7.5 years, they've been invited to and have taken part in really the free use of HendersonvilleLightning.com. And HendersonvilleLightning.com is going to join just about every other news site we know of, and just all of them around here for sure, that are also newspaper sites, in going to digital access that you can pay for. You'll have the opportunity to subscribe for $59.95 per year. We'll go to Hendersonville Lightning later today, and you'll see an explainer how this will work. If you have any questions or any trouble doing it, call Jan at 698-0407. And important, underscored, emphatic point is that current subscribers are long-time Friends of the Lightning who have been with us from the start, many of them, and those we've collected along the way, they will not have to pay because they're already print subscribers. Mm-hmm. And they will have to go in and create an account.
Right.
If you're able to save your Lightning that you get today on Lightning Thursday, one way to do it, won't be the only way, but one way to do it is to plug in your subscription number, which is that little, I think it's 4-digit, I'm not looking at one right in front of me.
Okay.
But that is a number in the upper left-hand corner of your address label, so that'll be one way to do it. So we're asking everybody to join us to join the Lightning in supporting local journalism as we continue on this important launch pad to the next 7 years and beyond.
So when does this begin?
Sometime, if all goes according to plan, later on today.
Okay.
And that'll be, and the so-called meter, metering stories just means do you get zero stories like the Wall Street Journal? Do you get 6 or 8 or 10 or different ones with, say, a Metro Daily? But we're a weekly paper, so we actually have less. So our meter is 2 stories.
Okay.
And it'll be on there.
We'll
be as open and transparent as on the digital access as we have been everything else since we've had the Lightning in 2012.
Okay. There is so much more still in the Lightning. For instance, Ask Matt, what will become of ambulance bays? How do actors at Flat Rock Playhouse and Hendersonville Community Theater find their marks on stage? Lots of great questions for Ask Matt. that that you can pick up and read. Bill, how do people pick up their copy of this week's Hendersonville Lightning?
Well, it'd be a good idea to keep to subscribe, and that way you already will have subscribed, and you will then you'll get to the digital access as well as a bonus as part of it. But for single copy buyers, and still we have lots of those as well, they can go to any of the 60 Lightning Orange racks around the county, or to coffee shops, convenience stores, and supermarkets and buy one, or go to HendersonvilleLightning.com, click on that red tab, and that also, I think, will give you the digital. It'll give you the choice to go. You could go digital only if you wanted to, because you're going to want that for sure, but a deal where you get the print and digital as well, or call Jan. It's 698-0407, or best of all, come see us at 1111 Asheville Highway.
You've been listening to Lightning Thursday with Bill Moss, editor and publisher of Hendersonville Lightning and HendersonvilleLightning.com. This and other episodes of Lightning Thursday are available via podcast at WTZQ.com. Click on air and scroll down to Lightning Thursday. Lightning Thursday is brought to you weekly by Fletcher Park Inn, independent Christian retirement community. Fletcher Park Inn, Henderson County's best kept retirement secret.